It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Well, folks, it's your old buddy Luke Clayton. It's once again time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton here on KETR. You know, last week we had a little fishing roundup. That was during the period of high water. A lot of flood water was in our reservoirs and in the rivers. We had Seth Vanover down at Lake Fork that gave us some fishing tips, and fishing was good then. It's good now. We have Seth back. I want him to let you know what's going on down at Lake Fork this week. Seth, thank you as always for spending time with us, buddy.
Glad to be here, Luke.
You know, last week we talked during more or less the peak of the high water, the floods, the influx of fresh water. That's things have kind of settled down. You said that your clients were, you had some out just yesterday from up north, one of the Midwestern states, and they caught some big bass, but they caught 8 and 9 pound bass instead of the 12s that you have been concentrating on. But I bet they were pretty happy with the 8 or 9 pounder, weren't they?
Well, given the fact they'd never seen one bigger than a pound, they were happy with it.
Yeah. Well, has there been any change on the bass fishing? Let's hang with bass first, and then, you know me, I've got to talk about catfishing a little bit. But the bass, other than they're still deep, I'm sure, but you said the size was down some on the most recent trips. But that's probably going to fluctuate day to day, isn't it?
It is. I mean, this past 4 or 5 days, it's just been nothing but just the good old East Texas heat now and humidity and no wind, and that makes fishing very, very difficult. Midday bite has all but gone. We're fishing mornings from about 6:30. Noon is about it, and we won't go back out till 5.
Well, that makes sense. And, you know, we are into summer right now. And as you and I have discussed many times, it's one thing to be in a climate control building or an office or whatever and talk about going fishing. Let's get out there. Let's fish all day. But it's a far different thing when you're, you know, say from 11:30 to 4 or 3:30 or something like that when the sun's beaming down on you. That's a good time to get in the shade and fish during the productive periods, right?
It is. I mean, that midday, you might catch a fish here or there, but it's just not worth the time and the effort and the sheer misery of being out in there to try to catch one or two fish.
Exactly. Well, as far as the bass are concerned, you're using the big perch, hand-sized perch, sunfish, if you will. Now you're dropping them straight down and catch and release on all of them, take their picture and hook them in the lip with those big hooks and let them go, right?
That's it. The pattern hadn't changed other than we're getting a little deeper. We're out of that 20-foot range, and we're getting into the more 30 to 33-foot range right now.
Okay. Let's shift gears a little bit. You predicted on this show about a month ago that when the channel catfish bite switched from shallow to deep, it would do so like in a day or two. And, you know, that I've noticed through the years that happens. Why it happens, I don't fully understand. But you were catching them in 3 foot of water the last time we talked. Now you don't catch many, or the ones you do catch shallow are little, right?
Yeah, they went from 3 foot to 30 foot in a matter of 72 hours.
That is amazing. You know, it's just, that reminds, makes me think of the waterfowl migration. I had a buddy that was he was in the Army, wildlife manager, and he was over some roost areas where the geese were, the Canada geese. There would be thousands and thousands of Canadas. And he lived in a cabin up there. And he told me, he said, Luke, in the fall, on a full moon, I don't know what, he doesn't know what caused it, but he said one day there would be thousands of geese on that marsh. In the middle of the night, you'd hear them, and they were gone. Mother Nature has rang a bell and told them to move. It's a lot like that with the catfish, isn't it, you know?
it is, and what I think it is, they just finished with their spawn and they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and they didn't hit any medium range depths. They didn't go to 12 feet or 15 feet. They went from 3 foot to 30 foot, just like that.
Yeah. Well, tell us how you're catching them right now.
Right now, it's basically the same setup as we were shallow. We're just taking the cork off, and we're going straight down over some baited holes. Right now, I'm not fishing real heavy timber. I'm kind of out in open water. And the reason for that is that's where all the schools of shad are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what the catfish are eating dead shad. As these schools get busted up by bass or just by attrition, they'll sink to the bottom. And that's what those catfish are eating out there in deep water.
You bet. Well, Seth, like always, man, we appreciate the weekly updates. And you know, we'll keep you – every time there's a change, we'll get you back, let you keep all of our fishing buddies tuned in. How about your website where they can learn more about fishing down there at Lake Fork?
You bet. It's LakeForkCatAndCrappie.com. You can do that on Facebook as well. They can see all the picture updates and what we're doing. Or you can give me a call at 903-736-4557.
Well, thank you, Seth, and good fishing to you, bud.
Thanks, bud.
Well, folks, that was our old buddy Seth Vanover down at Lake Fork. It sounds like the bass fishing, the trophy bass fishing, is underway right now. And also, it sounds like those old catfish have moved out to a little bit deeper water. You know, another fishing hotspot right now that I want to tell you about is the Red River below Lake Texoma. You know, Texoma got way up out of its banks here a couple of weeks ago. And all that influx of fresh water that's being released there at the dam, the Eisenhower Dam, restocks the Red River with stripers. And Larry Sparks, you know, was with us last week. That had just started, got underway. But now they're catching the daylights out of those big stripers. Up to about 18 pounds is the biggest I've heard of. But action is pretty much nonstop right below the spillway. Sparky's Guide Service, you might go there and look at some of the pictures. That's SPARKYS, SparkysGuideService.com. But they've been running their airboats, and that's a fun trip. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last week, but you actually just below the spillway launch the airboat right there. They run trips throughout the day, and fishing is usually just as good at 2 o'clock in the afternoon as it is at daylight, you know. I mean, the stripers are there. And they're heading back up into that current, but they use big live shad. Some shad as long as 6 or 8 inches long, and some of them even bigger, and they freeline them. And those old stripers are waiting for that for shad and bait fish to come down the, you know, down through the spillway there, and they're stacked up in big numbers. So it's a good way for someone that's never caught a bunch of stripers quickly and a bunch of big ones. It's a good trip right now. You can learn more about what Larry's doing up there, SparkysGuideService.com. Check it out. If you've never been up and really caught a bunch of fish quickly, it's a trip you might want to think about. You know, about 3 or 4 months ago, I began writing my second outdoor book. I wrote one back in the late 90s that was titled Hunting and Fishing Texas. And it kind of scattergunned hunting and fishing in Texas, all the different opportunities that we have. But for many years, I've contemplated writing a book on hog hunting. If you listen to this show very much or read my writing, you know I'm a rabid hog hunter from way back. I love to hunt hogs and process the meat and, you know, make sausage and ham and everything from the wild hogs. But the book, I got started on it, and I'm up to, I think, the 10th chapter right now. And the more, you know, I understood and understand the hunting process and all that about hogs and how to turn them into tasty food, but there's a lot that I've learned in the course of researching for this book. One thing is how valuable wild hogs really are. For the chapter 10, I interviewed last week one of the biggest processors of wild hogs in the country. And I learned that Europe was the biggest place that had the biggest demand for wild boar meat, wild hog meat. But the U.S. here in the last 5 years has really come up. A lot of people are buying USDA inspected wild pork, and a lot of trappers, many of them right up here in Northeast Texas, you know, are cashing in right now. For a good sized hog, you can get 50 to 55 cents a pound. Well, we had Donald Kelly on a couple of 3 weeks ago, a trapper up this way. But what they do, the trappers will round up a stock trailer full of hogs, maybe 20, 30 hogs. They might have to keep them for a week or two till they catch that many, and then go sell them for about 50 cents a pound, the bigger ones. The smaller ones bring less than that, 35 cents a pound or whatever. But, you know, they're well worth spending the time to trap. Now, once the hogs are delivered to the buyer, well, then the processing company comes, brings a truck, and they haul them into the processing plant. Now, this is something that I really, really was fascinated with. To ship wild pork meat, you know, it's processed meat, to ship it to Europe, it's important that it's tested each animal for trichinosis. I always thought most all wild hogs carry trichinosis, which is not a big deal. It's done away with when you heat it to appropriate temperatures, when you cook it. Even domesticated hogs have trichinosis. But I was amazed to learn in all the years this plant has been in operation, all the hogs, the thousands of hogs they've tested, not one tested positive for trichinosis. Now, I thought it really shocked me. Now, swine brucellosis is the primary reason we have to be so careful when we're field dressing and, you know, butchering wild game, wild hogs for that matter. But cooking the meat, once you cook pork, domestic or wild, get it up to the appropriate temperatures, it's safe for human consumption. The USDA passed a ruling not too many years ago where solid cuts of pork, such as pork chops, roast, steaks, pork needs to be heated to 145. They reduced it down, and then ground meat needs to be heated to 160 to be safe for human consumption. But myself, and I bet all of you that cook domestic or wild pork for that matter, probably heated up to closer to 200 degrees. Or I usually, when I'm making pulled pork, set my smoking techs at 220 or 225 degrees, maybe even 250 sometime. But it's necessary to really do that to get your pork tender. But it's amazing to me how much, you know, if they say if you have lemons, make lemonade. Well, we don't have a lot of lemons here in Texas other than down in the valley, but we do have a lot of wild hogs. So I'm glad to see that we're putting a surplus animal that a lot of people, you know, really disdain. But hogs are, as long as there's been mankind, hogs have been depended on big time for meat. I think the frontier folks in Texas probably might not have survived without hogs, but now we're overrun with them, and it just seems like a lot of people consider them to be vermin, but they're a valuable commodity, and people are learning how to use them, learning to, money's being made at the trapping level, you know, the hog buyers are making a profit at their level, and then ultimately the processing company that the hog buyers deliver to. You know, they make money when they process the hogs and sell them to Europe and the United States. So the bottom line is the old saying, follow the dollar. An animal that has value and people understand has value, chances are they're going to be around a while. Folks, this is Luke Clayton, and I really appreciate you tuning in each week. Today's show was made possible by the Dallas Safari Club, Rhino Steel Buildings, Margaret Holmes, and Glory Brand Seasoned Canned Goods, Hunter Supply, Snaplock Hunting Blinds, the Texas Deer Association, R&L Air Gun Supply, Smokin' Techs, Electric Smokers, Air Guns of Texas, and Sun Optics USA. Make sure and tune in this time next week. We're going to have some more fun talking hunting and fishing.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.